It's one of Kiarostami's films, which I think absolutely has to be seen on a big screen. So it's kind of, you know, this situation, watching something projected digitally would probably be better for Ten or Shirin or something like that. But I also imagine that a lot of you, maybe all of you, have seen it before. So maybe this will be a recap. So I just wanted to talk. I mean, Gilda, I'm sorry you've heard all this before, probably. But I wanted to give you my background to my interest in Iranian cinema, because I was born in England and I studied film in Canada and the US. And actually, the very first Iranian film I saw was something called Shadows of the Wind, directed by Bahman Farmanara, which showed at the 1979 World Film Festival here in Montreal, which I guess was after the revolution, but the film was made before the revolution. And this film did actually make a strong impression on me, as much as anything else, by its sense of color and a strong sort of visual style, which surprised me. But then it was a long time before I ever saw an Iranian film again. And that was so I used to take notes on index cards, so I'm actually going to read you a little bit of something that I wrote on one of the films I saw. So it was only after I came back to Montreal, so I got my job here in 1989, and I was so happy to come to Montreal, having lived for about 10 years in London, Ontario, which was like being in a film wilderness. And so coming to Montreal was pretty exciting. But I had no idea how cinemaniac Iranians were. So there was a series running at formerly known as CCA, the Conservatoire of Cinematographic Art, at Concordia University. In the Hall building, there was a small Iranian film series. And I got, I think, the last ticket to see something called Bashu, The Little Stranger. And in those days, there were over 700 seats in that, and it was sold out. You know, it was like, and I think I was the only non-Iranian in the audience, which was kind of weird. And I didn't know what to expect. And of course, this is the beginning of the, for me anyway, the beginning of the, like, Bezai versus Kiarostami thing. But, I mean, you know, this is, so we can talk about that after the film. I mean, I do actually have nothing whatsoever against Bezai. So I was probably more impressed with that kind of local Iranian cinemania for films than anything else. So this is what I wrote the 4th of February 1990 on Bashu, The Little Stranger. I said, amazingly large crowd to see surprisingly stylish but rather long story of a boy who runs away from home. And then towards the end I'm saying, interesting mixture of very dynamic moving camera, often like Kurosawa, through the camera traveling through vegetation and tracking fast, a mixture of that kind of stylishness and realism and so on. And so, you know, I was very impressed by the film, but I felt that it was, my negative comment was the acting is always larger than life and the emotions seem to be too overt most of the time. So this is something that we can come back to after we see. Anyway, that was only like the second Iranian film I'd ever seen. And then the third film was something by Mohsen Makhmalbaf, The Peddler, which I thought was absolutely awful, in fact. But I mean, it was my developing impression of Makhmalbaf is that he got this chance very early on to make films when he wasn't really a filmmaker, and then over his career, I think he always had something to say, but he didn't initially sort of have the tools, I think, to say that. And so he developed, and I'm just amazed at the Makhmalbaf Film House and how this whole film family can become filmmakers. That's very interesting. So I was introduced to Bezai and Makhmalbaf before I was to Kiarostami. And then I saw a film called In the Alleys of Love, directed by Khosrow Sinai. And then an old, much older pre-revolutionary film, The Postman, directed by Dariush Majoui, which I saw at the Cinémathèque Québécoise. So, you know, so Montreal is giving me this sort of opportunity to see these films. And then the next Iranian film I saw, and it's English titled then, when I saw it, at Toronto, the Toronto Festival, was Life and Nothing More. They changed the English title to And Life Goes On, which I think the original title is much closer to the title of the poem on which the title was based. And from the first shot of that film, I was in love with Kiarostami's films, and I just remember it so clearly now, is that here we are, situated at a toll booth on a road somewhere, and the camera is set up pointing directly at the toll booth, what I call perpendicular framing. So this is something like what we always see in Hollywood films is if we were filming you as a crowd, we would set the camera up at an angle, some kind of angle. You never have the situation unless the film is somewhat avant-garde and where the filmmaker is trying to radically do something different from the norm, but we never have the camera set up looking directly at 90 degrees to the subject. So here I was faced with, wow, what a strange way to film this scene, and this is how the film begins. And of course what happens, what develops, is that we have all of this, most of the film, it seems to me, perhaps I'm wrong about this, seems as if it's filmed from the side window of a car. And so we're kind of passing, that my strongest memory of the film, apart from the opening shot, are these traveling shots in the car, where the car is going past places which are in ruin, which are being reconstructed, the and life goes on idea. And I was just struck again by how the camera is invariably sort of framing everything at perpendicularly and at 90 degrees. So I'm interested in style. I mean, I'm interested in visual style. That was how I came into become a film student, because that was my interest. And so obviously primarily I was struck by something very, very original in Kiarostami's visual style from that first film. So over the next few years I was looking for Kiarostami films when I could find them. I just did this kind of list today of the first films I saw, and the first big year for me was 1997, when I managed to see like 16 Iranian films that year, including Kiarostami's Close Up the year before. I'd seen Homework, and the year before that I finally had seen Where Is the Friend's House, but I was watching a lot of these on video. So what was happening was that I was realizing that we had students who were also Iranian and who were fanatics about film as well, including Iranian cinema. Sorry. You're recording. Okay, I wasn't sure why you gave me your phone. So 1997 was a big year for us as well at Concordia University, because Donato Totaro, who is a good friend of mine, but he's written a lot on Iranian cinema, and two of our students, Farvad Honarpeshe and Shaheen Pahami, the four of us went to the conference of the Asian Cinema Studies Society in Peterborough, Ontario. That was the first time they were actually doing their conference in Canada. And we introduced this group of film scholars to Iranian cinema. We pointed out that their map, which appears on all of their journals, and they still haven't changed this, so I have to remind them, does not include Iran. So we kind of introduced Asian film scholarship to West Asian films and Iranian cinema. And also that same year, Donato actually did a report on that conference and included a discussion of what we did at the conference on off-screen an online journal, and I think you can still probably access that. Okay, so so I saw the first film in the Coca trilogy after I saw the second film, and of course the third, Where is the Friend's House, the first one, before the earthquake, and then Through the Olive Trees, which was made after, which is the third film in the trilogy, which I think is interesting in the sense that it's a kind of a reflexive film. So it's about a filmmaker looking for, And Life Goes On, or Life and Nothing More, is also reflexive in that it seems to be about a filmmaker looking for the, like Kiarostami himself, although he doesn't name himself in the film, looking for the boy who was in his first film. And so we have, the third film is even more reflexive, and we actually see scenes from the second film being filmed or restaged in the third film. So this very interesting level of reflexivity in Kiarostami's films, which is not like the modernist European reflexivity, in the sense that he always grounds whatever he's doing in realism, which I find sort of interesting. What I sort of plan to do here is to introduce you to a few concepts that I'm interested in Kiarostami's films. In 2000, so Taste of Cherry, I guess, was the film that introduced Kiarostami to the rest of the world. And, if we do get to talk about more Kiarostami's films, I'd be curious to what you think of that film, because actually it's my least favorite of all of Kiarostami's films, but that's the one that won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival, and that's the film that sort of gave him the reputation in film scholarship in the rest of the world. So I noticed I didn't even bother, so I stopped taking notes after a while on films on this index card system because DVDs became more and more available. And then in fact, most of us these days, I guess we get to watch films on DVD before we see them in the cinemas, because I think when I arrived in Montreal in 1989, this was a great film city. This was a great place to go and see films in theaters. But unfortunately, it's really gone down. So for example, Chérine, which, as far as I know, hasn't shown anywhere in North America. 10, 20 years ago, that film would have shown in Montreal for sure. I mean, it showed in Britain and it showed in France. It was even released in those two countries, which is how we are able to get a copy of it now, because it's come out on DVD in England. Anyway, so things have changed a lot. At the end of 2000, well, Kiarostami came here for the World Film Festival in 2000. He was the head of the jury at the World Film Festival. So I was very fortunate to be able to interview him at that festival. And that interview is still accessible online, I guess, at Off Screen, which was a very odd experience for me, because I don't think he answered any of my questions. So he's like a very clever guy. And so he sort of has this, he figures out, that he was very careful probably in a political sense, but I wasn't actually asking him political questions, because I'm interested in style. I was sort of asking him, why do you set the camera up like that? And he denied that he does that. And he said that, well, I just, whatever I do is natural, so I just, whatever I do stylistically is natural and so on. And so I even got somebody else to look at the interview afterwards to see if maybe there was a mistake in translation or something, but there wasn't. But anyway, he didn't really sort of answer my questions. And something I would say about him, it seems to me that most, especially now, I think most Iranians who are interested in film and politics are kind of angry at Kiarostami for not getting involved in the whole green movement and so on. But it seems to me that one of the ways we can appreciate his film, I think his films are actually political, even though he denies that. And so, especially his recent films, 10 for sure, is like about as feminist as a film could be made by a man, I think. Panahi's the other sort of example of that, with Circle. and Offside. But as well, I think Shirin is very much a political film, and even Taste of Cherry, which I already sort of disdainfully talked down a little bit, seems to me that's a political film because of all the different ethnicities that are included in it, and how all of these men from different ethnicities, the main character of that film who's contemplating suicide, is advised by all of these outsiders not to do that. So they're kind of these other ethnicities, these minority groups, are kind of have this very positive view of life. So I think that's interesting, and you could sort of put a political spin on that. I mean, the Where is the Friend's House and Life Goes On and Through the Olive Trees are probably his least political films, but I think that trilogy is probably his humanist trilogy, and this is the group of films I think that Kurosawa saw and really loved, because Kurosawa, who before he died was regarded as one of the greatest directors in the world, said that actually Kiarostami is the greatest director now. And after Kurosawa died, Kiarostami got this very prestigious award from Japan, from the nation of Japan, which is kind of like the Japanese Nobel Prize for the Arts or something. I don't know what it's called. And so therefore, for example, Kiarostami was invited to make a film, a tribute to Ozu, who was the great, even greater Japanese filmmaker in the eyes of Japanese film scholars than Kurosawa. And he and Hou Hsiao-hsien were the two from Taiwan, were the two filmmakers who were invited to do that. So so this is something else which I find interesting, is the connection between Japanese art and film, in fact, East Asian art and film, an Iranian film, especially Kiarostami. It's like, why would Kiarostami be so admired in Japan? And I think it has to do with partially with the intensity of his visual style, and the other aspect is that his films, like the Coca trilogy, are considered to be like poetic films. And I mean, I'm not at all in any sense any kind of expert on poetry. But it seems to me that in East Asia, in China and Japan, part of what the poetic sensibility and the impact of poetry is visual. Because Chinese and Japanese writing, calligraphy, is itself a visual art. And in classical Chinese and Japanese painting, we have the use of words, poetry, calligraphy, on paintings. And so that poetry, that calligraphy, actually becomes part of the artwork. In fact, the oldest Chinese art is calligraphy. Without knowing enough about this, I suggest that there's a connection with Iran and with Persian culture in this ancient devotion to poetry, and perhaps in calligraphy. And so that, you know, I don't know this, but I'm asking the question, maybe Persian poetry is actually visual as well, and that there's a very, you know, I'm suggesting that there might be a very close connection between poetry and the visual arts. Okay, so I brought in somebody, luckily when I went to Iran, somebody gave me this book, Kamal Ulmulk, an artist I was not aware of at all, but actually, and maybe Kiarostami himself has made allusions between his work and the work of this painter, but just take, for example, this landscape here. Now you'll notice, I mean, it looks just like some of the images we're going to see in tonight's film. Notice how the painter is, as I said, sets his easel up, but he's looking directly, perpendicularly at the landscape. He's kind of looking at the landscape directly, not at an angle, which is very different. This is complex. I mean, it's something like the Group of Seven, who are kind of modernist 20th century painters. So Kamal al-Mulk, I guess, worked in the late 19th century and early 20th century. So there's no connection there with the European modernist or North American modernist art movement. So I think that I'm suggesting that's interesting, and that perhaps Kiarostami has been influenced by this great Iranian painter, the past. I don't want you to look at the lacquered on one side, but if you look at the interior painting on the left-hand side here, again, we have the painter is looking at the architecture perpendicularly at 90 degrees, and we see, and most of the paintings in this book of interiors are like that. I'm suggesting that this is not just something that's specific to Iran. I would say we can see it in the Maghreb and the Maghreb, and also in Caucasian country, the Caucasus countries like Georgia. There's a filmmaker who I think you admire, Vadia, Parajanov, who films in this style as well. So I don't think this is something that's specific to Kiarostami, but he denies that he's doing this, but I'm sure he's deliberately, a lot of the time in his films, setting up the camera perpendicularly, even in a portraiture painting like this one over here, where actually the background is very faint and is almost sort of disappears. But that here again, this is like a perpendicular framing setup of the artist subject, which I think is very interesting. What I didn't bring with me are ancient Iranian paintings, where we can find that there's this sort of lack of perspective, where everything is flat, everything is on the same level, where animals and people and buildings and landscape, everything is kind of equalized. Suggestion, this is another connection. So although ancient Iranian painting is very, very different from ancient Chinese painting, I think there is a connection in a philosophical approach to the world where everything is considered to be equal. And this is something I haven't done as a scholar, and it's kind of a scary thing, but if I started all over again, I mean, my background is engineering. And I went into engineering because I was poor and I wanted money, and so my father wanted me to be an engineer, so I became an engineer, but it was never what I really wanted to do. And I became like a designer, and so I was drawing. So you know, film gave me a way of sort of coming back to my first love, which was painting and drawing. And I sort of, if I could do this over again, I think I would have loved to have been a researcher of ancient painting, like especially Chinese landscape painting. And you know, so it's kind of, by film gives me a way of sort of thinking about. Anyway, I have a problem with Western art in the sense that I think the Renaissance just absolutely dominates Western, that's European and North American perspectives on art. And there are a number of things connected with this. One of the problems I have one of it's monetary, you know, so it's sort of like you have this value, monetary value that's put on art. And so I think what happens is Middle Eastern and East Asian art are put in separate boxes. They're not considered in the same way as European and North American painting. So what that does is it kind of denies pre-Renaissance history of art. I mean, it's recognized, but it's kind of put to one side so that we can't see this kind of continuity or clear difference in a historical sort of approach to art. And the problem I have with the Renaissance is that it's fundamentally Christian, and so that you have this sense of people are painted in the sort of light of God, and it's kind of like this connection between man and God, and so God is in the form of man, and so that's all the paintings are like figure paintings. And so whereas what we can find in ancient Iranian paintings and Chinese and Japanese paintings is a completely different perspective on human beings, so that they're not necessarily tiny figures that we find in Chinese landscape paintings. But I think in ancient Persian art, there's this balance between man and nature. And so that's something that I really like also about Kiarostami. So I'm not saying that's specifically Iranian, but it's kind of humanist, but humanist, I think, in a different sense from North American and European approaches. Okay, so I know I'm sorry I'm talking way too much.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you're sort of interested more in what I have to say about Kiarostami, so there are some pieces I've written on off-screen. I did that interview with Kiarostami, and then I wrote a piece called Iran 2000, because it seems to me that year was absolutely great year for Iranian films, and well, like 1998 to 2000. I mean, Panahi's The Circle came out in 2000. Rakhsan Bani Etemad sort of came to prominence at that. It was like a really, really exciting period, I think, for Iranian cinema. And so 1999, The Wind Will Carry Us. So this film, actually, there's a poll that's just been conducted by James Kwan, who's the head, the director of the Ontario Cinematheque, and there's a lot of critics polls being conducted, right, film critics polls, which look back over the last 10 years. Well, this was a poll of curators, art historians, and archivists, and people who program films for film festivals. It was done by the Ontario Cinematheque. And it's interesting, the only Iranian film actually that appears on the best of the last 10 years is The Wind Will Carry Us. Even though it was made in 1999, I guess it was actually released in the year 2000. Now, what I want to suggest about this film is, I talked about visual style. This is set in a Kurdish village. So continuing on from Taste of Cherry, I see there's a political dimension to this film in terms of, once again, dealing with an ethnic minority. And here, having this film crew coming from the city, coming from Tehran, they're like the bad guys. They're coming to this village and disrupting life there. And they're like anthropologists. So they're ethnographic filmmakers who want to film this funeral procession, this Kurdish, because they've heard that this old woman in the village is going to die. Now, we never see her. Why don't we ever actually see her? Well, I don't think, and this is a realist aspect to what Kiarostami does. He tends not to go inside houses. So I didn't get him to talk about this. I don't know if he has talked about this. But it seems to me one of the reasons he doesn't do that, I mean, I think there's not one single interior scene in this film, is that if he goes inside somebody's house and he's filming women, they have to wear the veil, right? And they wouldn't be doing that in their own house. So I think he doesn't want to film domestic situations, because any filming of those domestic situations would not be realistic. It would not be honest. And so I think that's one of the reasons why he tends not to do that. When we do see houses up close from the exterior, often we're looking into doorways or into windows. We're not necessarily seeing much beyond those doorways or windows. Somebody might be standing in the doorway. So I think part of it is a visual strategy as well, because I think he likes that idea of filming walls, filming through windows, and filming through doorways. And I think he doesn't go inside the houses. because he wants to be naturalistic. Now, he's found this village, which in itself is very interesting, because it's like one person's house is the next person's patio, and so we have these houses piled up on top of one another. And we have this situation of the guy from the city, he's always calling on his cell phone, and he can't get a signal. So he has to go to the top of a mountain in order to... And this is a kind of a running gag in the film, that this guy's not being able to use his cell phone. Now, there's a lot of... one of the criticisms, for those of you who don't like Kiarostami, I would imagine one of the problems you have with his work is that there's so much repetition. We see things over and over again. And this film is a very strong example of that. But I think, for me, this repetition becomes kind of rhythmic, and therefore it's part of the style of the film. It's, you know, this is a story film, this is a narrative film, it's not a documentary. But I think that the structure of it is somewhat avant-garde in being, in some ways, like an abstract film. So we get these sort of repetitions of things, and graphically it's very interesting, you know, to look at this village. And I believe I asked Kiarostami this question as well. I said, well, you call the film Where the Wind Will Carry Us, but I think it's actually about gravity, that I think the driving force of this film is gravity. So we have the man from the city is always having to go to the top. He's having to fight gravity in order to use this modern technology of the cell phone, which doesn't work. But then it's like nature and life obeys gravity. So, for example, there's a situation where some boys are playing football and a ball bounces down this hill. I think we also see running water. And so I'm getting goosebumps thinking about this. But anyway, there's lots of I think different ways of approaching this film stylistically and formally, which actually has sort of nothing to do with the story. I'm sorry that we're not seeing a 35mm print, because that's, you know, it's so much better seen that way. So much of it is filmed in long shot at a distance, so I think, you know, but it looked like it was okay, the projection. So we'll you can argue with me or whatever after.